Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, we have a real problem on our hands, a real challenge. I mean, here we are, this is the 21st century, and Crocs are all the rage. I mean, it's iPhones, and then it's Crocs, and I don't know what else there is. That's where we're at. So to take our Crocs away on Yom Kippur, right? To take away our electronics, our technology on Shabbos is one challenge, and then to take away our Crocs on Yom Kippur after that is probably a close second. So, Rav Eliashiv's I don't know if you look at the article at the headline, I think it's a little bit misleading. Maybe you could suggest, right? But that's what news outlets do, right? What does it say? It says Rabbi Eliashiv, no Crocs on Yom Kippur. That's a very direct way of saying it. I'm not sure that's the only, it's exactly what he said. If you take a look at the third paragraph, actually, on that last page, what Rav Eliashiv actually said is that it is permissible legalistically, right, end of the third paragraph there, right? In other words, technically it's permissible. I don't know why they say legalistically as opposed to legally, but okay, that isn't me, that's what... Try to make things sound smart. It's permissible legalistically, but it is inadvisable. Now, that's a little bit of a different thing. So what we're going to hopefully do for the next few minutes in reviewing really what you all started and then perhaps going a step beyond that is to really learn a little bit together, where did this come from? Did Rav Eliashiv just make this up? What are the sources and what are the issues in terms of wearing leather versus non-leather shoes? And that's really the topic. And then is there perhaps some added message, some lesson that we can perhaps derive as we approach Yom Kippur?
Legalistically. I don't know.
Okay. Right. You know, what we do, what our kids sometimes, the easiest way to translate nowadays is, what do?
Google
Translate, of course, right? I don't have to. That's right, that's it. Now, our students have learned that there's no Google Translate for Aramaic. At least not yet. What? But there's an app for that, so don't worry.
Yeah, Art School has. Art School Gemara.
The trick is don't ask the teachers, ask the students, and that's really that's always the best way to find out what the newest thing is. But really, it's the question is, where is this all, right? Isn't that so true? Okay. So the question is, where does this all come from, and what's going on? Okay, so clearly the major source is the Gemara, and it's not a short Gemara, and it's not the simplest of passages. Really, this section requires a little bit of heavy lifting. So Kol HaKavod, really kudos to everyone for working it through. We're not going to read through the entire Gemara right now, but if I were to ask someone, if you were to summarize, let's say, looking at the English for just a moment, to summarize the first section, the first paragraph. Lior, what do you think? I see you're raising your hand over there. What? Yeah, that's what happens when you try to volunteer your friend.
What did you tell me you really wanted?
Lior, I have to tell you a story, and then I'll give you a second to think about the question, and then you get to answer it if you want. It's a great story they tell about Rav Soloveitchik's shir. Rav Soloveitchik in shir at Yeshiva University was considered to be an absolute terror. And he would, if you would say something wrong, he would just call you out on it. And so the new students were exceedingly frightened. They were scared to death to be in his class. And so there was one student who was just scared out of his mind. So what does he do? So, and of course, Rabbi Soloveitchik comes in, doesn't know half the names because a lot of them are new students. And he goes down the roll list and he chooses Yankel, you're going to read. Okay. So Yankel's sitting there in the back and he's white as a sheet. So what he ends up doing is that Yankel, of course, says, Chacham. So what does he say? Yankel's not here today. His friends are all rolling their eyes. So the Rav says, in his, I won't attempt the Yiddish accent, so the Rav says, okay, so you read. So I'm pulling your robe. Okay, so it could be Lior, it could be anyone. Anyone have a quick summary if I were to ask you the first paragraph? What would you say? Anyone? What's the common denominator? All these rabbis who went forth, would you say, what did they think about the possible distinction between leather and other materials? Did they think that there are the shoes that are not made of leather? What would you say? Okay, we've seen that it's okay. We're very familiar with this idea that there's a difference between leather shoes and other kinds of shoes. In fact, we find this in halacha and other places as well. And if you take a look here, that seems to be what's happening. Okay, we'll take a look from the English. They further inquired, what is the law regarding going forth on the Day of Atonement in sandals of bamboo? This Gemara in Masechet Yoma, and toward the end of Masechet Yoma, which says Yoma, of course, means the day. What's the day? The day. It's Yom Kippur. Okay, so in this section, the Gemara is discussing the different halachot of the ways in which we refrain from pleasures on Yom Kippur. What's that called? What's the halach? Anyone know the halachic term for refraining from pleasures on Yom Kippur? Right, there are five of them. The five afflictions. The five starts with an ayin. The five inu. Anyone finish it? Inuyim. Okay, the five different afflictions. Okay, one of the five is, of course, not wearing shoes. How do we generally define that? Not wearing. What do we usually say? Not wearing
leather
shoes, right? That's what I said. In fact, if you read the first paragraph of this Gemara, it would seem at first glance to support that, because the Gemara says, well, what's the law if they're essentially non-leather shoes? And the Gemara tells a story. It's story time in the Gemara, and the Gemara tells story after story after story about great rabbis who did exactly that. They walked out on Yom Kippur in non-leather shoes. So you have the example. Rabbi Isaac Bar Nachmani stood on his feet and said, I saw myself, Rabbi Jatya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, going forth in sandals of bamboo, what the Gemara calls a sandal shel sha'a, bamboo shoes, right? This is the proof that you should use bamboo, right? Bamboo is a good material for your sukkah, right? Because Yom Kippur and Sukkot are very much connected, only 5 days apart, and they're going out in bamboo. They're getting ready for it to put it. Then they're going to, after Yom Kippur, they're going to go and put it up on their sukkah, right? I asked you for the time. This is before bamboo mats, of course. This is a lower level of halachic existence. Okay, so then the Gemara continues. I asked him, what about in the public fast day? He answered, there's no difference. You can do that as well. At that time, the public fast days for rain were very strict, very severe. Those had the stringency of almost like Yom Kippur. And they were that desperate, and there were that level of stringency associated in Eretz Yisrael and in Babel as well, Babylonia, when there was a drought. So then also, you can wear it. And again, other examples, another sample of bamboo, sample of reeds, of palm branches, twisted reeds, right, and so on and so forth. So if I just had this section of the Gemara, what would I conclude, seemingly? That basically, Crocs, right? What would be the halakha with regards to Crocs?
They're good.
All right, they're good to go. They don't seem like leather to me. And these seem like fine shoes, reeds and bamboo and all these different options. And nevertheless, what's the halakha? Right? It's going to be considered to be okay. And that's what the Gemara seems to say here. And then the Gemara says, hold on just one second. Right? We have a question. Rami Bar Chama raised an objection. And what was the halakha? This is about, the Gemara calls a kita. A kita is an amputee. And there's a question about an amputee going out on Shabbat and Yom Kippur. What would be the issue on Shabbat? Right? Be carrying, is that considered to be carrying outside of an Eruv? We actually pass in that if someone needs a staff to get around, the generally accepted psaka that's not considered to be carrying even outside an Eruv, because that's the way this individual is walking. This is not, it's not an additional piece of clothing. This is considered an extension of myself in that it really helps me to get around on Shabbat. So there's this discussion about an amputee or others who are in need of a cane, of a staff, something like that, to get around. So Rami Bar Chama quotes this braita, this statement from the Tanaim, from the early rabbis of the time of the Mishnah, says that there's a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. An amputee may go forth on Shabbat with his artificial foot. These are the words of Rabbi Meir, while Rabbi Yossi forbids it. And then the Gemara says that it's stated concerning this braita that both agree that he may not go forth with it on the Day of Atonement. And then there's this whole back and forth, right? This whole question, are you allowed to go on the Day of Atonement, or you're not allowed to go on Yom HaKippurim? And what does the Gemara conclude? Take a look at Rava, the last paragraph. Ela Amar Rava, from the Hebrew and the English, rather said Rava, La'ola, meaning really, Dechuli Alma, right, or in truth, Dechuli Alma, that all agree, Min Olhu, that the artificial leg is considered to be a shoe. And however, right, with regard to what? Everyone agrees. Shabbos or Yom HaKippurim? Which one? Everyone agrees. We'll take a look at the next line. But in the case of Shabbat, they differ on a particular point. Right? And they disagree about whether or not there's a gezeirah, whether or not the rabbis decree that you're not allowed to go out because you might come to drop it or lose it, and then you'll come to carry in a public domain, or should harabim in Shabbat, which would be problematic. So what do we see? According to Rabbah...
Well, one says the truth, all agree, in order to, like, it's considered a shoe.
Good.
to what end? I mean, if it's not talking about carrying on Shabbos, what's the difference?
So clearly, well, what's it talking about? It's not talking about Shabbos, and clearly it's talking about
Yom Kippur.
Now, what's this made out of? Is it made out of leather? What's the material here? What? Okay. Wood.
So,
what? Well, it said cloth. It didn't say leather. If you look carefully earlier.
Think.
Yeah. There are pads there. But the pads are not leather. Because that was the whole thrust of the Gemara. First the Gemara said that it's okay, you know, all these cases, people who would go out with non-leather shoes, the Gemara says, wait a second, what about the amputee who's not allowed to go out? And Rava ends up saying, yes, you see that the amputee with the wooden leg with the padding, that's considered to be a shoe. So it sounds from the whole presentation of the Gemara that here, we're not talking about leather, that's the whole point. And Rava says, oh, actually, there's a problem here. So now what we have is a real issue. Because Rava, who's a major authority from the Amoraim, from the time of the Gemara, says that it's actually problematic to go out in a wooden shoe. What's the problem with that? Right? How many great rabbis who lived before Rava, who appear earlier in this Gemara, went out with non-leather shoes? Right? Count them. Right? Anyone got the number? I've got Rav Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni. Okay? That's one. What do we got? Five or so? Right? I've got fourth line from the top of this page. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. I've got Rabba Bar Barchana. I've got Reuzer of Ninveh. I've got Rava, even Rava himself, right? Okay, even, by the way, Rava himself. Okay? I got like seven. What? He saw someone else. Okay, so take one off my list. Okay? I'm over-dramatizing the point. It's seven, not eight, or six, not seven, whatever the number is. Yeah?
But there's no comparison, because if the first paragraph is saying all these rabbis wore this nine shoe,
so that could be a resolution. We're going to get to something in that direction in the Rambam, which we're going to see. Which we're going to see soon. So if you just read the Gemara, really you get conflicting impressions. So a whole slew of rabbis that seem to imply that it's a basic difference that we kind of, many of us perhaps, let's take for granted that non-leather shoes are okay, and that's the end of it. If it's leather, it's considered to be a shoe, and therefore it falls under that one of the five inuyim, the five forms of affliction on Yom Kippur, and if not, not. But then you read the end of the Gemara, you get a totally different impression. Rava himself seems to cut the other way. So how do we resolve this contradiction? One suggestion just now, but what do we do? And in fact, if you take a look at source number two, you'll see the riff. And the riff is printed in the back of the Gemara. Anyone know where the riff is from? Anyone? Any of my students?
Sparty.
What? Sparty? Yes, definite Sparty. Okay. In fact, we have a lot of Spartan on the sheet. What? He lived in Morocco's right. He lived in a place called. Do you remember? What? He lived in no, but in which town? You're correct. In which town in the country of Morocco? In Fez, okay, a place called Fez. Do you remember that? No, I guess I don't remember that. Where's Daniel? Do you remember that, Daniel? It's in your here notebook. Remembers it? Okay, your iPad remembers very well. Okay, what? At the beginning of freshman year, really? Am I supposed to learn? Remember stuff I learned? Okay. Fantastic. Okay, please don't give me a bookina. I would probably also. We'll have some work to do there. So the Rif lives in Fez, Morocco, in the 11th century. So it's nearly 1,000 years ago. And consider one of the great Svardic and really just generally one of the great poskim of really of all Jewish history. And he's right there on the cusp, right before the medieval, the Rishonim, the period of the Rishonim. There were the Geonim of Babylonia, great scholars then. And then transitions to the Rishonim of France and of Spain. And he's right there on the cusp. So the Moroccan Jewish community in North Africa really is part of that transition. And so what does the Rif do over here? Okay, take a look. Which opinion or which section of the Gemara does he quote? Very nice. Daniel, what do you say?
Quotes the first section.
Quotes the first section. He just basically cuts and pastes. The only difference is that his Rabbi Elazar is not Rabbi Elazar of Ninveh, it was pointed out, but rather just a Rabbi Elazar. But otherwise, what is he doing? He's just cutting and pasting. So what's interesting about this? It would seem nothing. He's just copying the Gemara, right? What's interesting? Go ahead.
Well, he's copying a specific portion of the Gemara, okay, to point out what the opinion is, which it's like saying that the prohibition is not against being comfortable, it's against leather specifically, because he doesn't reiterate the word Gemara about comfort.
Okay, so he cuts out the whole ends of the Gemara. That whole problematic section or question section that posed the problem for us, he says, yeah, that was Rava. Rava in one place has an opinion. Do we pass him that way?
No, right?
But the Rif is not, forget, we'll get to that in a second, but for the Rif is just saying, you know, forget all of that. So according to the Rif, what would seem to be the halacha? Could he wear Crocs according to the Rif?
Yes.
At first, right? It would seem yes. That the answer is that would be fine as well. So, okay, so far we've got a Gemara, but we've got a Rif, so we've still got our Crocs. We're okay. We're in pretty good shape, I think. Right? Who, I don't want to say ruins everything, because that's a terrible way of saying it. Who makes our life perhaps more complicated, maybe, is the Rambam. Why the Rambam? In source number 3.
Seems like the Ashkenazi sources are leaning more towards you can wear Crocs, and Sfardim are...
Well, the Rif was a Sfardim and said you could.
Yeah. I'm saying it's far enough to say you can wear Crocs, Ashkenazi.
Yeah, the other way. Well, we'll have to see if there's any difference. We haven't really seen Ashkenazic sources. We just saw the Gemara.
The Rambam.
The Rambam is also Sephardi. Okay. The Rambam is born in Spain. There's a heavy Sephardi bent here. So shout out. We'll get to the Mishnah Berurah with Ashkenazi, so don't worry. The Rambam... the Rambam originally from Spain and settles ultimately in Egypt. The Rambam says what? In source 3, in the laws of Shvitat Asur, what does that mean? Shvita? What is the word Shvita? Right? From the word Shabbos. Right? So what does it mean? Right? Is to rest. Asur. What does Asur mean?
Can't.
Okay? That's with the Samet. Here it's with a sin. Take a look at it. Do you see it? It's right here. Right by source number 3. So what does it mean? Right. The 10th of what? 10th of Tishrei. Okay? The 10th of Tishrei. So resting on the 10th of Tishrei, right? To the laws of the things that we do not do on Yom HaKippurim. And with the way that the Rambam presents this halakha, as he says, again, we'll look at on the English, he says, it's forbidden to wear a shoe or sandal even on one foot. It is, however, permissible to wear a sandal made of reeds, rushes, which is another kind of reed, or the like. And one may wind cloth over his foot, over his feet, or the like, for his feet. Why? For his feet remain sensitive to the hardness of the ground. He feels as if he is...
Barefoot.
Feels as if he's barefoot. And that's why it's okay to wear non-leather shoes. So according to the Rambam, what's the distinction? What's the rule that holds?
Okay? Yeah. As long as it feels like you're barefoot, you're allowed to wear it.
Okay. No? Do you feel barefoot? How many people here feel barefoot when they wear Crocs? What do you think? What?
If you're not wearing socks, it kind of gives you the impression.
Is it like that? Do you feel like you're literally stepping on the ground?
No.
All right? Right, I wouldn't say that.
Crocs have
right? There's a reason that we wear the Crocs, right? I mean, that's not really comfortable. Okay? So, yeah, go ahead. Okay. So right. So according to the Rambam, let's say I wore non-leather shoes that were very comfortable. I didn't feel the ground at all. I'm floating on air. Comfortable. And I'm wearing them to shul on Yom Kippur. According to the Rambam, what would the halakha seem to be? It would be problematic. So here we seem to have a debate between the Rif and the Rambam, two of the great poskim. The Rif seems to say, well, it's just leather versus non-leather. Take the whole first section of the Gemara and that's it. The Rambam seems to say, no, that's not what it meant. There's a distinction. Maybe that's how you put the two parts of the Gemara together, according to the Rambam. It depends. If you feel like you're barefoot, then you're good to go. But if you're wearing something really comfortable, really sturdy shoe... Yeah. Okay, interesting.
I just thought that like bamboo and wood is much more secure.
It's more substantial. And therefore, we might think that that's already problematic.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exclude that. I just thought that would mean that everybody else included that there was being.
Very nice. So that could be consistent with his view. And that fits in very nicely as well. Very nice. Okay. So what do we do as a matter of practical halakha? What do we paskin? What's the halakha? So if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source 4, the Shulchan Aruch... I don't know if anyone got to the Shulchan Aruch, but the Shulchan Aruch basically says Like the riff.
Yeah.
Straight out riff. So if I were, according to the Shulchan Aruch, what's the halacha? Right, you take a look yourself. He just says it's forbidden, right? If it's made of wood and layered with leather, it's problematic, he says. But if it's made of rushes or straw, he just says, right, it's totally fine. Does he say anything about comfort or discomfort, barefoot, not barefoot, any of that? Right?
But he talks about Crocs.
He seems to say
other materials.
Other materials are?
That would be Crocs. Other materials.
We didn't say Crocs. Well, no, he wouldn't have said Crocs. So it's possible to say that he's saying only these because they're less comfortable. It's possible. But then it's a little bit misleading because he could have clarified the underlying principle. So it sounds like, it's not 1,000%, but it sounds more like he's just saying as a flat-out principle, leather versus non-leather. That's how it's generally read, and that seems to be the simpler reading. So if I were asking, what is the Shulchan Aruch rule? The classic halakha lemaaseh, wouldn't know what to do, you look at the Shulchan Aruch, right? So what did we learn in Shulchan Aruch?
Like the riff.
It would seem, like the riff, and like the whole first listing of the Gemara, would seem
that you can wear cracks.
Right, that you can wear cracks, and indeed, that's the generally accepted halacha. And even Rav Eliashiv, with all respect to this really catchy headline in the article, but with respect to the reporter, it does seem that the Shulchan Aruch rules and the accepted halacha is that as a matter of strict halacha, yes, don't worry, if you're used to the Crocs, you're halakhically permitted to continue to wear them according to the Shulchan Aruch and according to the basic halacha. Period, end of story. Except it's not exactly the end of the story. Because if you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah on source number 5, he says, basically, on the one hand, he says that the strict halacha is like the Shulchan Aruch, but then he says, but what about the view of the Rambam? What about that whole perspective? He says that there are some, he quotes latter-day authorities, right? If you take a look from the beginning, but one made of rushes, etc., says the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, much more recent commentary, living earlier part of the 20th century for the most part, for anything not made of leather is not called a shoe but clothing. Right? So that's just straight out like the Rif and like the Shulchan Aruch, which he's commenting on. But then he says, there are some latter-day authorities who are strict with regard to wood, even if it's not covered with leather. Whose opinion is that based on? It seems to be based on the Rambam. And then he goes on and on and on. And if you take a look, he says, behold, I'm about 10 lines from the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah. Behold, even though one should not protest against those who rule leniently, since the Shulchan Aruch and the majority of latter-day authorities are lenient, nevertheless, for one who is capable, it's good to be strict in this matter, and to walk with cloth footwear as is common. So the Mishnah Berurah does suggest that. Now, in all fairness, like, what do you think about what was there before Crocs? What do I still wear? Maybe
sneakers.
Some other guilty parties here. What?
Sneakers.
You can do sneakers. I have something else.
Slippers.
What? I don't even have slippers. I have. Well, I have canvas shoes. What? I didn't hear you. Okay. I apologize. What? See, it's the same. Yeah. Similar. Okay. So that's what I have. I don't know. Is that considered? Is that as if you're walking on the ground? So I think it depends on what you're used to. I mean, for us, it kind of does.
What is that?
But I don't know if that's what, if we lived 100 years ago, for, you know, 50, if that's necessarily what we'd feel. It all depends on what's considered, you know, to some extent, there's like a cultural component, what's comfortable in your society a little bit. If you're used to Crocs, then they kind of feel like, you know, like you're on the, they as well be barefoot. Yeah, later.
I don't know, I was saying Converse, I think, are more comfortable than like those Chinese slippers, let's say.
That might be already more low-lying kinds of, I don't know. So I'm not sure, you know, so that's the question. What would really fulfill the Mishnah Berurah's, you know, I wouldn't even say recommendation, but sort of strict. If you wanted to be strict like the Mishnah Berurah, you'd kind of have to wear something pretty uncomfortable, I think. And I don't even know exactly what that would be. Would that be a slipper? Would that, I don't know if the canvas would qualify. I don't think that the sneakers, the non-leather sneakers would qualify. Clearly not the Crocs. So I don't know what shoes you'd have to wear nowadays in our society to fulfill this, other than socks. But, you know, that's not what we're recommending today. So, you know, that's sort of the question. So the short version is basically that the strict halacha, as we see, is really like the Shulchan Aruch, in accordance with the first section of the Gemara and the Rif and the Shulchan Aruch, as he said, and the Shulchan Aruch, that it's technically, that it's absolutely, strictly speaking, Crocs are okay. The Mishabura does recommend if you can find something else. I'm just not sure, A, if everyone agrees with the Mishabura, and B, I'm not sure that exactly what shoes would even qualify for that nowadays, and that's why, you know, many are not necessarily strict for this position of the Mishabura.
The Mishabura is saying that you can be more lenient when you're walking outside.
Yes, he adds that as well. That's a good point. Because there it's not for comfort, it's just because otherwise there are all sorts, you know, and there's streets, there were, you know.
Right, except that in the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to be the opposite. It seems like it's saying you have to be stricter when you're walking outside.
That's just an issue of, that's a separate issue of Hotza'ah on Yom HaKippurim. In other words, that's not a question of inoy, of discomfort, that's a question of carrying outside of in a public domain.
Oh, because of the other,
Even to go out in Rosh Hashanah, there's no issue of Hotza'ah. Correct.
Shoes. Yeah.
Right, but it is considered to be shoes, so that is that way. Okay, that would, yeah.
So the notion of high heels or platforms.
Ah, okay.
You're not even touching.
It's like really distant
yeah.
from the floor. Okay. You'll forgive me for not knowing. Are there non-leather good options for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Oh, yes. Okay, I've heard the term. Now I know what it means. So thank you for educating me. I appreciate it. Okay, so that's sort of the halachic background. Again, as a matter of practical halacha, generally speaking, we follow the strict halacha that it's absolutely permissible to wear Crocs or these other shoes. There are some who try not to wear Crocs, but again, my sense is if you're still wearing sneakers or even canvas or other things like that, I don't think that you fulfill it anyway, so you'd have to go much further. So I'd think that you'd have to either go one extreme or the other. And the general practice is indeed to wear Crocs and to really follow that. I just wanted to add, just in closing, I'm not going to read the piece inside, really just share my own thought. You can take a look. There's a piece that I gave you on source 6 from the Mesilat Yesharim, but really just a little bit based on that, but just share just one thought to close. With that, as a family, as we can, and perhaps go into Yom Kippur, just a little bit, something to think about. What's this whole idea of inoy? I mean, really, this whole idea of physical afflictions. I mean, especially if we believe, as I think we do, that the physical world is not a negative place. We believe that the physical world, if it's dedicated toward a higher purpose, if it's used and ultimately uplifted, it has value, and it can be used for the good. So when we eat our pizza outside, right, we can make a bracha beforehand and after, where we can thank Hashem, and it can be elevated, and it can be value-added religiously. And we believe that the physical world has potential for the positive, and it can be uplifted. So the whole idea of Yom Kippur, we say, fat, you physical world, right? Or we're trying to run away from you, and to physically afflict ourselves. To me, it doesn't sound like the mainstream Jewish position, which is not an ascetic kind of perspective, which doesn't believe that the physical world is inherently negative or bad or should be distanced, but rather needs to be elevated and to be used for a positive purpose. So why are we running away from it? What's this whole idea? But I think that part of what we're trying to say on Yom Kippur with this whole idea of affliction and staying away from physical enjoyment is I think we're really making a statement once a year about, I think, our entire year. And I think what we're trying to suggest is, what's this whole idea of staying away from physical pleasures? Who are we resembling? Which beings, right? Clearly, it's the angels, right? We're standing Yom Kippur with our feet together. We're reciting the praises of the angels. There are so many ways in which we try to really be angelic and to really be shorn of anything physical in that way, and to be more spiritual in that sense. So what I'd like to, just a parting thought, is maybe what we're trying to say is not that the physical world is in any way negative, but we're trying to make a statement about our ultimate priorities. And we're trying to say that really on Yom Kippur, one day a year, we make a statement. And the statement is that really, ultimately, all that physical endeavor, it's for a higher purpose. It's about being angelic. It's about getting as close as we can to the worlds of the angels, the celestial spheres, in the ultimate, in the larger, in the metaphorical sense, in terms of being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to God, and to the heavens, in that sense of the term. And perhaps what we're trying to suggest with this whole notion of inoy is not that the physical world is a bad place, or that it's negative, or it's evil, or anything like that, just the opposite. But what we're trying to say is that when throughout the year we engage with physicality, there's something higher that it's all dedicated to world. that ultimately what we're trying to do is to elevate all of these different encounters and responsibilities and homework and also just all the different things, stuff that we have to do and that we don't have a choice but to do. We're trying to say to God, you know, we're not always feeling it. And even when we daven, and even when we learn, and even when we're in class every day, and even when we're, certainly when we're out there in the world of business or our family responsibilities, we're not always feeling that connection. But once a year we say to God, you know what, away with the physical stuff, this is really ultimately what it's all about. And all that other stuff, I want to remind myself and to remind God one day a year, that ultimately it's about a higher purpose. So that's just a suggestion. I think that that's part of what's going on over here. And I want to thank and really recognize all of you for joining us as families. I want to thank again Rabbi Friedman, and hopefully I want to have a Gemara Chatzimah Tova, and hopefully an opportunity to do this more in the future. This is really very beautiful and a beautiful, special first start. So I thank everyone.